maybe something lighthearted.
I'm feeling too good today. I'm feeling the way I should. I'm feeling too good today.
Hear them all on Big Band Broadway and beyond. I'm Joe, your host, every Friday from 10 a.m. till noon on WHFR 89.3.
I'm feeling too good today. I got the feeling too good today blues.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek, along with Susan McGraw, for this Friday afternoon as we talk about things going on in the community, in the state, on campus, all sorts of things that we like to put in front of you here on the WHFR Journal. And as I mentioned last week on the program, when we listened to a candidate forum for the Dearborn School Board, Board of Education election coming up, as the leaves change and fall off the trees, it generally means election season is upon us. And that is certainly the case here in 2022, our midterm elections, and a very, very interesting one as well. First one, I think, on a nationwide level and statewide level with redistricting, although there have been some previous elections back in 2021. We've got a lot of things to talk about, proposals on the ballot, still some of those lingering questions as we've worked our way into this vote, absentee voting, things like that. And Susan, whenever we have those questions or we think our listeners might have those questions, we know who to talk to. Is that correct?
We do. We are so lucky and really grateful to live in a community and work in a community where we have one of the very best League of Women Voter organizations represented. And the League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights, we think is just the preeminent of these organizations. Yes, I know other cities will argue, but that's just too bad.
There's no hometown pride there. That's
we know it. Yeah, right. No doubt about it. And very excited to have with us today via our Zoom line, our interview Zoom hotline, Jennifer Oliver, who is the president of League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights. And Jen, I can only imagine what a hectic time this is for you and your team, not only at this local level, but statewide and nationwide. And I know it starts with the printing of a bunch of important material. I've seen it around. I have some of it with me. So there is no lack of opportunity for people to get the information that they need and have the questions answered that they're looking for. But sometimes, you know, we kind of just don't know what to ask, especially if we're a first-time voter or even a potential first-time voter, not even knowing if we're allowed to vote in a primary, for example. We have certainly some younger students, younger community members who might very well be listening right now. So can you give us the 411 on how to kick off this process? Did you get my inside joke there? And we welcome you and look forward to a bunch of good advice. So to start with, how do we figure out if we're eligible to vote? And if we're not, what can we do? And if we are, but we're not registered, what happens then?
Yeah, that's a very great question. And thank you, as always, Susan and Alan, for having me here today to answer that and other questions you might have. It's always a pleasure. So anybody who is a U.S. citizen and is 18 years or older and is not currently serving a conviction sentence is eligible to vote. So if you aren't sure if you're registered and you're over 18 and you're a U.S. citizen, you can check the Michigan Voter Information Center at mi.gov/vote to see your status. If you're not registered, you have time to go and see your city clerk. So once you go to your city clerk, take your ID and fill out an application, and they will get you registered in the system.
And so for those first-time voters, when you say bring your identification, is are you tied down to where you're driver's license might be, or your state ID, or is there other identification like utility bills or things like that you can do to prove your residency in the district in which you intend to vote?
If you have a driver's license or a state ID that or a passport, that's obviously a great thing. It's very helpful. Social Security card is also a good one. So if you're unsure, call your clerk to see what sort of identification they would need that day. They can give you all that information over the phone. They may even have it on their website. So definitely check with your local clerk.
Right. And to clarify, Jen, the city that we live in is the city that we vote in.
Yeah. Correct. Yes, that is correct. In Dearborn, you would go to the Dearborn Administrative Center to see George Duraney. In Dearborn Heights, you'd go to City Hall to see Lynn Senia. And they and their staff can walk you through the process.
Excellent. How late can we do that? For example, somebody listening today, understanding we've got, less than 10 days before Election Day, up until what point can someone head to their city clerk's office and not only find out, but also if they discover that they're not eligible to vote, get registered?
If you're not registered, you can register to vote and vote up until 8 p.m. on Election Day. So you can show up at the clerk's office at 7:30 p.m. on November 8th and register, fill out your application, get your ballot right there, vote it on site and turn it right back into the clerk and you voted. You're all set.
Excellent.
In addition to, registering for people who are currently registered voters, obviously the absentee ballot is certainly a big issue, something we've gotten used to over the past couple of years. It certainly served us well back in 2020 when there were a lot of issues in getting to the polling places and things like that. That still continues. That still goes on, correct? Anybody can do that. And what's that process like? And I know especially Susan mentioned 10 days coming up or so until the election, what the recommendations are in terms of mailing ballots in versus drop boxes and dropping. So just a refresher on that kind of stuff for us.
Sure, absolutely. Any registered voter can vote absentee. You don't need a reason for it anymore. You would need to fill out an application and take that to your clerk. I would advise taking it in person at this point. And you can get your ballot. They'll check you in and give you your ballot. And you can either vote on site and turn it right back into the clerk, or you can take it home, do some research, think about your choices for a little bit longer, and then either take it back to the clerk or put it in your city's drop box. So I'd like to emphasize that you need to use your own city's drop box. It's not like a mailbox. If you vote in, say, Dearborn, you need to take your ballot to the Dearborn Administrative Center, and there's a drop box right in the parking lot. And in Dearborn Heights, we have drop boxes outside of City Hall and the John F. Kennedy Jr. Library on the south end.
That's the one on Van Born, I think, just west of Telegraph. So covers yes. Both ends of the cities, because Dearborn is obviously a pretty large geographic city as well. But so there's one in Dearborn Heights at the John F. Kennedy Library, not to be confused with the Caroline Kennedy Library.
Right.
And also, but that's also right by City Hall anyway, there in central Dearborn Heights. And then the administrative center in Dearborn is which one? It's not the old City Hall at Michigan and Schaefer, correct?
No, it is on Michigan between Southfield and Greenfield.
Gotcha.
Yep. So if you go around to the back to the parking lot, there's a drop box right there.
Great. And one thing I didn't hear you say, Jen, is if you have not yet received an absentee ballot, once you get it, note that you need to get it in person at this point because it's too late for them to mail one out to you. But it also may be getting dangerously close to that too late to mail it in time frame. So the difference between the drop box and mailing an absentee ballot are very, very different things, especially as we're this close. Yes. And what are your thoughts on that?
I agree with you completely. At this point, we do recommend that people drop off their ballots in person to the drop box or to the clerk's office if it's open when you visit, if you go to your city hall or administrative center. I wouldn't recommend mailing it at this point. You hope it would get in on time, but things happen. So at least when you put your ballot in the drop box, then you know it's been received and it's safe. And if you want to double check that your ballot has been received and processed, you can look at the Michigan Voter Information Center website, again, mi.gov/vote. And it'll tell you the status of your absentee ballot.
Great. When we talk to experts that really seem to know the ins and outs of the process of voting, Jen Oliver, top of that list here, representing League of Women Voters, Dearborn, Dearborn Heights, one of the things that we stay away from, and purposefully so, is telling people how to vote. In that we say how to vote metaphorically, but not how to vote literally, or vice versa. The beauty of
not who, how, not who, right? Yes.
Com at who? Yeah, I like that. I like that. So the League of Women Voters prides themselves on being nonpartisan, of course. Sometimes we get into things like ballot proposals, particularly ones that relate to the right to vote. And I know sometimes there are some opinions based on that. So this is a pretty, you know, speaking of proposals, we have some pretty meaty stuff going on right now, some pretty heavy topics. And I know the one that is probably first and, you know, front and center of League of Women Voters is that one relating to voter rights in general. Before I ask the question about that, Jen, we have the right now in this state to have an absentee vote regardless of our situation. And that did not come without a fight and a vote. And so not something that we should just instantly take for granted or take it, you know, just with a grain of salt. But a lot of these things have been a long time in the making. The redistricting process to make it as fair as possible was a long time in the making, and so many other things related to that. Do you have somewhat of a statistic? It doesn't have to be an actual percentage or anything, but just for example, the use of absentee in this past election versus physical people getting out and voting. Yes, it was troubling COVID times, but have we seen that spike that one would expect in the use of absentee ballots, for example, in the past opportunities for people to vote?
So I don't have an exact statistic on hand for, say, the August primary, but we do know from speaking with local clerks and local voters that the absentee ballots have been a very popular option. It's been nice not only to avoid various waves of the pandemic, to stay at home and vote safely, but it's also been nice for people who maybe don't want to get out in the cold, you know, if they find it difficult to travel in the cold, or if they have to work and their schedule doesn't accommodate a trip to the polls. So really, it's been a great boon to Michigan voters to have that option.
And have you had any conversations with the clerks in terms of numbers of absentee ballots that have been sent out this time for this November 2022 election? I'm just kind of wondering if after we've done this a few times, if maybe the novelty is worn off. And I'm speaking of myself. I got the thing in the mail to get my absentee ballot, and I just never got around to doing it. So now I am going to have to go vote in person, because I'm that kind of person that's definitely going to do that. What have you seen from the clerks, and what has it looked like from their perspective, if you've had those conversations?
I haven't had a conversation since the primary election with either of the clerks, but I know that historically we've seen quite a few voters choose the absentee option, and then some, of course, will choose the absentee option and then not vote that ballot, and then they'll end up voting in person instead.
In person.
Yeah, and we can talk about it, how to do that as well. But I think we're starting to see people who may have opted for the absentee ballot during the worst of the pandemic coming back to the polls, because I think people do like to vote in the polls. They do like to put their ballots in the tabulator and maybe see their neighbors or the poll workers that they've known for years. So I think maybe, you know, people are still obviously using the absentee option. It's a great option, but I think we have seen a little bit more of a return to the polls.
Yeah. For me, it's all about the sticker. I want that I voted sticker so I can proudly wear it all day long.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Those are always popular with voters when I've worked elections.
So now Susan had mentioned earlier getting into the proposal portion of the ballot, and these are statewide proposals specifically that we're talking about, rather than like any city charter amendments that might apply to your community and things like that. And I think the one that you had mentioned, Susan, was proposal two, and there's three of them, which are all proposals for constitutional amendments for the Michigan state constitution. And this would, it's called the Promote the Vote 2022, which certainly seems to be right in step with, the work that the League of Women Voters does on a nonpartisan basis, which is encouraging active engagement in the process of democracy and voting. And so what is on that ballot or in that proposal, and what would it mean for the voters of the state of Michigan?
Well, it is Promote the Vote 2022. So it's the continuation of Promote the Vote, which is what we passed in 2018 and gave us the right to reason-free absentee voting and various other things. So this has several points. I'd like to make a few of the important ones, because these have come up in discussions with the community at local and state levels. Proposal 2, if it's passed, would enshrine the current voter ID law in Michigan, where voters are required to produce a photo ID at the polls or sign a legally binding affidavit. And we note that less than 2% of voters tend to use the affidavit option statewide, but it is good to have it there in case you've driven from work and you don't have your ID, you just forgot it, and you're willing to swear in this affidavit that you are the voter you say you are. You can still cast your ballot. Proposal 2 would also allow more time for ballots to be returned from overseas voters, as long as they are postmarked by November 8th, even if they don't arrive at the clerk's office by November 8th, say overseas military could still cast their ballots. And one of the other important things that it would do is ensure that election results are decided only by the ballots cast by voters and not by, say, a partisan legislature.
Which we've certainly seen come into play on a national level relatively recently as well. And I know the goal is that every vote that is cast does count. And certainly we've seen, kind of like those worst case examples of trying to determine legitimacy of ballots and things like that. And the league's position, certainly as far as I understand it, is, you know, that affidavit is your way of swearing. And we always look at those, you know, like one or two votes that whether they actually sway an election or not, and want to make sure that every ballot is counted. Correct?
Correct. Yes. Yeah. Those affidavits are legally binding. It says that you are the voter and you say you are, you have cast the ballot legally. And someone who signs the affidavits and is acting in bad faith, well, that's election fraud, which is punishable by a fine or jail. And that wouldn't change if Proposal 2 were passed.
Okay, that's important. We are hearing, you know, a lot of pulling apart of phrasing and words and proposals, and we know that that's not unusual or new when it comes to interpretation of proposals. But when someone creates a proposal to have it potentially be put on the ballot, I know they need to have a certain number of signatures and all that kind of thing. Is it safe to say that proposals that didn't make it to this ballot are probably being worked on now for the next election cycle? Is that how long in advance these things actually get worked out? And I'm talking about perhaps new ones, not ones like the continuation of Promote the Vote, et cetera.
That's entirely possible. I know that some of the ballot proposals that we saw in 2018, those started kind of making the rounds in grassroots circles in early 2017. So it does take a few years to get things through the system. So it's entirely possible that we'll see things pop up again in 2 or 4 years.
We certainly saw that, you know, even on a local level after the 2020 election, when ballots were being counted at, I still call it COBO, but TCF Center, now it's Huntington Center or something like that. That issue of what rights citizens have in order to observe the process, number one, and balancing that against the rights that voters have when they go to the polls, and kind of like getting at that another section there in the voter guide, and something that you know, we're want to bring up is what your rights are when you do go to the polls and the security of your ballot when the process is being tabulated. And we've seen many, many issues of that. There's no reason to think that it's not going to be a recurring thing in future elections as well.
Yes, I think election security is always a concern of voters. I know I've spoken with voters at the polls who've said just that. I'd like to emphasize that there are levels of security at all levels. And, you know, even if the poll workers take our jobs very seriously, we want to make sure that every ballot is counted, every ballot is valid. And the city clerk's offices also take their jobs very seriously. And that goes up to each county has a board of canvassers who reviews all of the elections in the county, make sure that all of the ballots are valid and have been validly counted. And then that goes to the state level. So there are many checks. And I think voters should feel secure that their vote counts.
And from your perspective, everybody acting in good faith to be able to figure out the fair and honest result of this election, because that's what the whole system's based off of, right? If we can't at least agree on that, then we have a lot of issues to discuss.
Yeah, here in Michigan, I think we also can back up the vote by the paper trail, and we cast paper ballots. And so, you know, at the very least, we can go back to that. But yes, we do assume that people are acting in good faith, but we have built in several checks and balances to back up what we do.
Good. Yeah, to piggyback on that concept of feeling good about the process in every aspect of it, Jen, we, you know, this, I even hate to throw the term out. I never knew it was a term. It is a term now. It's probably, you know, going to be in some dictionaries somewhere, some type of publications, this concept of voter intimidation. And if we have people being concerned and not voting because of their worry about what could happen when they go to the polls, well, that's as big of voter intimidation as I've ever heard. So there's that worry. But then there's, when you get to the polls, expectation of what's appropriate, what's not appropriate, what people can give you, how they can talk to you, things like that. Speak to that just briefly. We want to try to keep this positive, of course, but certainly need to be realistic about who knows what could happen.
Sure. Once you're in the polls, we can't have any campaign literature, campaign material, et cetera. That all has to stay outside behind the poll line. If you're at the polls and you're being harassed by, say, supporters of a certain candidate or party or whatever, or if you see something that doesn't look right, you can either call, you can call 866, Our Vote, which is the election protection hotline. It is in Michigan. The partners include the ACLU, League of Women Voters of Michigan, locally Access, and various other nonpartisan organizations. And they can take your complaints and make the necessary calls and communications. And that may involve somebody coming out to monitor the precinct, et cetera. So, you know, don't hesitate to use that hotline if you see something that isn't quite right or if you're harassed at the polls, because we really want voters to be able to cast their votes freely and fairly and safely.
Now, you mentioned Access for our voters in Dearborn. Want to bring up the question about if language assistance is available or what languages ballots would be available in the city of Dearborn or any other cities that may have multilingual populations.
Yeah, in Dearborn, you can get a ballot in either English or Arabic. And in Dearborn and Dearborn Heights, I know there are Arabic speakers at every polling location, so there is language assistance available. Yep, and off the top of my head, I can't remember who, I believe Hamtramck also has language.
I believe that they also offer Arabic, just from one of our previous conversations that was another community, with a large Arabic speaking population that had that language ballot available to them as well. And there are others that will have Spanish language ballots available language assistance available at the polling places as well. That depends on the individual community, I'd imagine.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, that makes sense. As we're talking about the safety precautions, the literal process of making the vote, getting the vote, having it count, whether you're doing it from home, dropping it in a drop box, not in a mailbox at this point, please, but showing up in person, showing up to register and vote on the same day, et cetera. The one thing that I want to make sure that we speak to is just why. Why it's important to vote. So yeah, you maybe have to jump through a hoop or two, but it's not that hard. You know, it's not as hard as sometimes when we have these heavy discussions, we make it sound like, but when you do the basic stuff and you get it done right and you're in a position where you now have the choice, should I vote or should I not vote? Why does the League of Women Voters believe that it's the right decision to make to cast that vote?
We believe that everybody should have a voice in their government. We have a representative democracy, and that relies on people getting out and voting their interests, voting for society, voting for the people that they think will best represent them, and for the policies, the ballot proposals that will best represent their interests and the interests of their communities. So really, it's about making your voice heard as Americans.
Excellent reasoning. When we think about the young people that are going to be our future, we're hoping to set the stage and leave something positive and fair and appropriate for them. It's not too soon, I think, to start carving out not only the example of why it's important to vote, but getting involved in other aspects as well. Joining the League of Women Voters, you know, Dearborn, Dearborn Heights, or joining a local affiliation or some school activism, etc. Anything on the sort of on the mindset right now of trying to bring in younger voters and those that are, say, 16, 17 and not quite ready, but soon, how do we approach them making good decisions moving forward?
I think civics education is really important. And I think initiatives like our youth voter registration project that we do every spring are important to go into the local high schools and talk to the kids about voting and about civics and encourage them to register to vote and maybe demystify the process a little bit. And, you know, when we're out in the community, if you see us, come up and talk to us, ask us what we're doing. We're always looking for members and volunteers. And, you know, we like to go out and educate the community and talk about the important stuff.
Now, I think Susan mentioned earlier in the interview the voter guides that the League of Women Voters publishes both on the statewide and on the local chapter level for Dearborn and Dearborn Heights. Where are those guides available? And I know there's also a website as well, which just like everything gives you just a nice, quick and easy way to take care of things. But where are those guides to be found? And I know I've seen a few on the Henry Ford College campus as well. So for those of us on campus, I know that we have a few sitting around here somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great to hear. I have to first give a shout out to our Vote 411 and voter guide team. Our Betsy Cushman, Jennifer Gabrish, and Jennifer Teller, who've done an excellent job contacting all of the candidates and compiling the layouts and getting these things distributed to the communities. You can find our voter guides. We have both local for the Dearborn and Dearborn Heights elections and statewide guides. Those can be found at clerk's offices and libraries in Dearborn and Dearborn Heights. The statewide guides can also be found in some municipal locations in Downriver communities as well. And those are chock full of good information about all of the races on your ballot. They include responses directly from the candidates to questions that we've posed. These are completely unedited by us, verbatim from the candidates, entirely nonpartisan and unbiased information.
Excellent. This has been a tough, there's a lot going on, I'll put it that way. And I know that you, more than anybody related to this this election process here in our community, Jen, you know that and are living through that. When election day hits and election night hits, what do members of the League of Women Voters do? What do you watch for results to come in? Are many of you and your crew members working at the polls, going to celebration parties for things that you're excited about? What's the behind the scenes looking like for your crew?
I think all of the above, depending on the member. I will personally be working the polls, so I probably won't get home until very late, and I will be, you know, updating my phone, email, or web browser to see the results as they come in. I think we all probably do that at least. Regardless of where we are, I'll probably be at City Hall on my phone looking at the results. But I think there is a great interest in how everything will shake out.
Yeah, and it's not uncommon for us to know that before we go to sleep on the 8th of November, correct?
Right. Yeah, it really depends on how quickly the various municipalities can get their results into the counties and then have those reported out. Yeah, so that's, if there's a holdup, it's probably, I know that last August there was a power outage in Dearborn Heights on election day. So we were sitting at City Hall waiting to check out at the end of the night and all of the lights went down. So, you know, something like that delays the process a little bit. So things happen, but everything got counted. Everything was valid and tabulated and checked in eventually. So, you know, listeners, be patient. If you don't get the results right away, they will come in.
And for those highly local elections, those are certified by the city clerks, say, for school boards and things like that. For anything that's county or statewide, mm-hmm. it goes from them to the county and then up to the state, or even obviously the federal level as well when you're talking about federal elections. Is that how it works behind the scenes in terms of where your votes actually get counted initially locally, but then feed into a larger system? Is that an accurate assessment?
That is accurate, yes. And so sometimes that can delay the process of certification because the process has to be started, I believe, by Thursday after Election Day, but it can take up to 2 weeks depending on the size of the county, how many races they have to check. It's really about making sure that the process is accurate and that everything is counted accurately and everything is valid.
So then once Election Day is over and done and dusted, the votes have all been counted, when do all these changes in our government take place in terms of either at the city level, the offices that are being run for there, or the state level and federal level as well?
Sure. All of the various state and house races and school board and everything, that'll take effect on January 1st. And so the swearing-in ceremonies might not happen immediately, but the offices will take effect that date.
And is that the same also for instance, United States House of Representatives and Senate? Obviously, we're used to, I'm just thinking of the presidential election where the date January 6th certainly is one that we're familiar with at this point, not actually on New Year's Day, or is it different for House of Reps and for U.S. Senate?
Off the top of my head, I believe that the office officially takes effect on January 1st, but they won't get sworn in until the first working day of Congress.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Yeah, right. Exactly. There's a ceremonial procedure that takes place certainly at that level of election as well. Now, you mentioned your team that worked on the voter guides and things like that. Let's just sort of, I'm trying to think, Jennifer, you've been the president of the local league. Is it what, going on 3 years now, or did I miss a year in there somewhere?
It's been about a year and a half now.
Oh, it is. Okay. All right. Well, it's just been a busy year and a half. How big is the team? How big is and thriving is the organization and things like that? And maybe your chance to talk about why it's an organization that concerned citizens might want to have some interest in becoming closer to.
Sure. Yeah. As an organization, we have a membership in the 90s. I don't have the exact number for you. I will get that at our next board meeting. but we do have a very active voter service team, which is co-chaired by Betsy Cushman and Jennifer Gabrish. And the two of them and our assistant treasurer, Jennifer Teller, have done excellent work on the voter guides. And we've had a dedicated team to distribute the print guides and to come up with questions for the voter guides and the forums. And Betsy and both Jennifers have also maintained the Vote 411 website as well. So vote411.org is the online voter guide. I don't know that we've discussed that very much, but it's kind of a one-stop shop for all of the races, all of the ballot proposals. You enter in your address, and then you can see all of the races that'll be on your ballot, find out where you vote, et cetera. And really, they are such a great team, and they've done such a great job. And really, we're always looking for interested citizens who care about local and higher level politics to join us, because we're always talking about what issues matter to local voters. What can we learn more about? What questions should we be asking our candidates? And so any input is welcome.
And that's that ongoing part of democracy that takes place on the other 364 days of the year that we don't go voting. Just a little question about poll workers. Talked to city clerks. How are things looking for poll workers, and how could if anyone's interested, is there a need for them? Is it too late to sign up and do those kinds of things?
I know as a poll worker in Dearborn Heights, we are starting the pre-election training this week. So if you want to get in as a poll worker still, it's worth contacting your city clerk to see if they need people and if you are still able to get training.
And though they are, so when we say that city clerk, it seems like this mythical creature for each city, but they're the ones who are tasked with actually holding and conducting the elections. Is that a fair way of saying it?
That is correct. Yes.
So yeah, that's their job, is to get this election done, make sure every vote is counted, and make sure that it's registered and sent to wherever it needs to go in order for democracy to take that next step into action, right?
That is correct. Yeah, the clerks make it all happen. It's a tough job, and we have clerks who have done a really great job making sure that we have what we need for our local elections.
Well, Jennifer, you've really helped us find what we need for this interview to discuss a variety of aspects of this election coming up down the road, just less than 2 weeks away, November 8th, these midterms, as we're calling them. Polls open at 7 a.m., close at 8 p.m., and we encourage any listener who is still uncertain about something related to this process to check out Vote 411 or League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights website. But it's pretty easy to remember that vote411.org or that telephone number should you have issues relating to the process of voting specifically on election day or otherwise, 866-OUR-VOTE. 866-OUR-VOTE. Jot that down, maybe have it handy. Hopefully you won't need to use it. The best kind of feedback is when we hear after the fact that it was wonderful turnout, a great election, and whatever, whether our candidates win or lose, our proposals, etc. I think it's safe to say that everyone is invested in wanting an election cycle that's going to be a success, and how we measure that internally, I think, is different maybe than how we're following our favorite candidates, but there's something to be said about making sure that all these things are in place, and it sounds like we're well on our way to having a successful one. So, but we need you to vote, whatever that means. We need you to get out there and vote. Jen, always a pleasure. Again, we throw things at you that we don't prepare in advance, and you're always so kind to just jump in and try to find the answer, and if not, we know you'll circle back to us with it, but we thank you for your time and hope you get a little bit of respite after next week is said and done before you start kicking things up again for the next one.
Well, speaking of throwing curveballs, talk about polling places. I know that districts, for a lot of people, first time around since redistricting, if you have any question about where your polling place is or where to show up to vote on election day, does that start with your city clerk as well?
It can, but if you want to do a really quick, easy lookup from the comfort of your own home, you can look up vote411.org or the Michigan Voter Information Center, again, mi.gov/vote. Either of those sites will tell you where to vote.
And vote411.org, you simply enter your mailing address, zip code. It shows you what's going to be on your ballot and gives you all of the information that you need in order to successfully to complete. I'm trying to think, is there a better word for it? Actualize or realize? No, just complete. To complete your ballot and get it turned in. We'll just settle on that one.
Yep, that's correct. You can find all of that information at vote411.org. We encourage
everyone on election day, as Susan mentioned, that 866-OUR-VOTE is a hotline for nonpartisan election protection and assistance. Also available at michiganvoting.org, michiganvoting.org. And I think all of that information is also going to be available on that vote411 website and in the League of Women Voters voter guides as well.
That's correct.
Excellent. So much great information. Thank you, Alan, for remembering about polling places, especially with some of the changes going on. That's an important
one. Of us are going to do it old school this time. You just need to make sure if our old polling places and our current polling place now. Yeah.
Get that sticker. We got to earn it. That's right. Jen, thank you for your time. We appreciate you as always and look forward to hearing great things post-election, post next week. And we wish you continued success in what you're doing.
Thank you so much, Susan and Alan. It has been a pleasure.
And keep us up to date on any upcoming voter forum or candidate forums and things like that, things that our listeners might be interested in. We'll be more than willing to help share the word on that as well.
Sure thing. Yeah, we have a few candidate forums linked on our website, www.lwvddh.org. So please feel free to check those out. The Dearborn and Crestwood School Board elections are covered on the website.
We were able to listen to the Dearborn one last week, but the Crestwood one for folks in Dearborn Heights is available there on the website, lwvddh.org. And we always appreciate that partnership where we're able to broadcast those forums for our listeners as well. Jen Oliver is the president, the leader, the head honcho of the League of Women Voters, Dearborn, Dearborn Heights. And it's always great to have her here on the WHFR Journal. And of course, Susan McGraw, it's always great to spend time with you as well. We'll be back after the break with more on today's program as we make waves here on WHFR 89.3 FM, WHFR.FM.
It's Halloween, I'm gonna trick or treat.
Happy Halloween from WHFR.FM. To celebrate, we're giving you goodies. Call the station anytime Saturday, Sunday, or Monday. Say trick or treat, and we'll take down your contact info and send you a WHFR Halloween grab bag. Our number is 313-845-9676. For your WHFR Halloween grab bag, give us a call. Say trick or treat October 29th, 30th, or 31st at 313-845-9676. Happy Halloween.
This is the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek. Pleased to be with you until 2 o'clock this Friday afternoon here on WHFR Making Waves. We thank Jen Oliver for being with us on today's WHFR Journal. And, of course, encourage everybody, no matter how you vote, make sure you do vote. There is still time to register, as you know, to cast your ballot. And, of course, for more information on your local elections, you can visit vote411.org. Or for those in Dearborn and Dearborn Heights, visit lwvddh.org. Always a pleasure to talk to Jen Oliver. Always a pleasure to be here until 2 o'clock and see Kitty Love's smiling face as she takes us on a trip down Highway 61 for some blues this Friday afternoon. That's coming up in just a few minutes. She'll be followed by Mike Holloway and the Go With The Flow Mike Holloway Show. And then we've got something special for you this evening here on WHFR. Now, Henry Ford College is hosting a Trunk or Treat event this evening in Dearborn Heights for the kids of Dearborn, Dearborn Heights, and surrounding communities. And although registration for that particular event is already closed, one of the things we're doing here at WHFR is providing the soundtrack for everybody participating in that event over in Dearborn Heights to be able to listen to us over the radio. What that means is we've got a spooky 2 hours of music scheduled for you this evening from 6 to 8 p.m. here on WHFR. We'll make some spooky waves, so we do hope you'll stick around for that. Even if you're not participating in the event, there's going to be lots of great stuff to listen to this evening between 6 and 8 p.m. And speaking of the spooky time of year, yes, as I mentioned at the top of the program, when the leaves change color and fall off the tree, it's usually election season. It's also the witching hour and spooky season. And indeed, we're going to send off you this week's program in a very, very, very spooky vein with one of the all-time horror classics. And indeed, we do hope you enjoy going into this Halloween weekend listening to this production of a radio production of Edgar Allan Poe's The Telltale Heart. It comes to us courtesy of our colleagues at KUER in Salt Lake City, Utah, Radio West, and Salt Lake City's Plan B Theater Company. Edgar Allan Poe's horror classic, The Telltale Heart. Murder, guilt, insanity, all brought to life. It doesn't get any better than that for our working our way into the Halloween weekend here on the WHFR Journal.
Alone. From childhood's hour, I have not been as others were. I have not seen as others saw. I could not bring my passions from a common spring. From the same source, I have not taken my sorrow. I could not awaken my heart to joy at the same tone. And all I loved alone. Then, in my childhood, in the dawn of a most stormy life, was drawn from every depth of good and ill the mystery which binds me still. From the torrent or the fountain, from the red cliff of the mountain, from the sun that round me rolled in its autumn tint of gold, from the lightning in the sky as it passed me flying by, from the thunder and the storm and the cloud that took the form, when the rest of heaven was blue, of a demon in my view.
And now, the Telltale Heart.
nervous. Very, very dreadfully nervous I had been and am. But why will you say that I am mad? The disease had sharpened my senses, not destroyed, not dulled them. Above all was the sense of hearing acute. I heard all things in the heaven and in the earth. I heard many things in hell. How then am I mad? Hearken and observe how healthily, how calmly I can tell you the whole story. It began late one evening as I sat in the old man's parlor, busying myself with a poem. Once upon a time. Yeah, cliche. It was a dark and stormy night.
Yeah, worse.
Young man, what in God's name are you doing up at this hour?
Once
it is almost midnight.
Midnight.
And I must say, what a dreary night it is, too. I could not sleep due to the storm rolling in. It gives me the wiggins.
Once upon a midnight dreary. Ah, old man, you have solved it. Brilliant.
How pleased to be of service. However, I may not linger. I am in search of a cure for my sleeplessness. A spot of scotch always does the trick.
I do think I will join you. Just this once.
Yes. Nothing better than fine scotch. Calms the heart. To your health.
And to yours as well.
Well, good night then.
It was then that I noticed. How could I have missed it all this while? There was something about the old man's eye. It is impossible to say how the idea first entered my brain, but once conceived, it haunted me day and night. Object there was none. Passion there was none. I loved the old man. He had never wronged me. He had never given me insult. For his gold I had no desire. Yes, it was his eye. He had the eye of a vulture. A pale blue eye with a film over it. Whenever it fell upon me, my blood ran cold. And so by degrees, very gradually, I made up my mind to take the life of the old man and thus rid myself of the eye forever. Now, this is the point. You fancy me mad. Madmen know nothing. But you should have seen me. You should have seen how wisely I proceeded. I was never kinder to the old man than during the whole week before I killed him.
Yes, yes, very good. Ah, my dear boy, an exquisite supper followed by a fine cigar.
Can only be surpassed by an exquisite supper combined with fine company.
Oh, you give me too much credit, if you will excuse me. I fear I must retire these old bones for the evening.
Yes, of course. I lost track of the hour. I thank you for your company and bid you good night. Hopefully sleep will fall upon you in due haste.
And to you as well. Sleep well. Good night.
I waited until midnight. I went into his chamber and I turned the latch of his door and I opened it. Oh, so gently. And then, when I had made an opening sufficient for my head, I put in a dark lantern, all closed, closed that no light shone out. I then thrust in my head. Oh, you would have laughed to see how cunningly I thrust it in. I moved it slowly, very, very slowly, so that I may not disturb the old man's sleep. It took me an hour to place my whole head within the opening so far that I could see him as he lay upon his bed. And then, when my head was well in the room, I undid the lantern cautiously. Oh, so cautiously. Cautiously. I undid it just so much that a single thin ray fell full upon the vulture eye. And this I did for 7 long nights, every night just at midnight. But I found the eye always closed, and so it was impossible to do the work. For it was not the old man who vexed me, but his evil eye. And every morning when the day broke...
Good morning, boy.
And what a fine morning it is. I trust you slept well last night?
Oh, yes, indeed. Tea?
Yes, thank you.
Might I inquire how the writing is going? Your latest poem, Once Upon a Midnight,
Dreary.
Midnight Dreary. I hope you'll give me credit for that someday when you have made your fortune.
So you see, he would have been a very profound old man indeed to suspect that every night, just at 12, I looked in upon him while he slept. Upon the 8th night, I was more than usually cautious in opening the door. His room was as black as pitch, and so I knew that he could not see the opening of the door, and I kept pushing it on steadily, steadily. I had my head in and was about to open the lantern when my thumb slipped upon the tin fastening.
Who is there? Who is it?
I kept quite still and said nothing. For a whole hour, I did not move a muscle. And in the meantime, I did not hear him lie down. He was still sitting up in bed, listening. And then... I knew that sound well. It was the mournful influence of the unperceived shadow that caused him to feel, although he neither saw nor heard, to feel the presence of my head within the room. Many a night, just at midnight when all the world slept, that very sound has welled up from my own bosom, deepening with its dreadful echo the terrors that distracted me. When I had waited a long time, very patiently, without hearing him lie down, I resolved to open a little, a very, very little crevice in the lantern, until a simple dim ray, like the thread of the spider, shot from out the crevice and fell full upon the vulture eye. It was open, wide, wide open, and I grew furious as I gazed upon it. I saw it with perfect distinctness, all a dull blue with a hideous veil over it that chilled the very marrow in my bones. But I could see nothing else of the old man's face or person, for I had directed the ray as if by instinct precisely upon that damned spot. Now, there came to my ears a low, dull, quick sound, such as a watch makes when enveloped in cotton. I knew that sound well, too. It was the beating of the old man's heart. It increased my fury as the beating of a drum stimulates the soldier into courage. But even yet, I refrained and kept still. I scarcely breathed. I held the lantern motionless. And now, at the dead hour of the night, amid the dreadful silence of that old house, so strange a noise as this excited me to uncontrollable terror. Yet, for some minutes longer, I refrained and stood still. But the beating grew louder, louder. The sound would be heard by a neighbor. The old man's hour had come. The old man was dead. I examined the corpse. I placed my hand upon the heart, and I held it there many minutes. There was no pulse. He was stone dead. His eye would trouble me no more. The night waned, and I worked hastily, but in silence. First of all, I dismembered the corpse. I cut off the head, and then the arms and the legs. I then took up 3 planks from the flooring of the chamber. I deposited all between the scantlings. I I then replaced the board so cleverly, so cunningly, that no human eye, not even his, could have detected anything wrong. There was nothing to wash out, no stain of any kind, no blood spot whatever. I had been too wary for that. A tub had caught it all. When I had made an end of these labors, it was 4 o'clock, still dark as midnight. As the bell sounded the hour, who could this be at this
hour?
Open
up! Police!
Open up in there! Open up! Open up in there!
The police! What am I to fear?
Open up!
In due time! In due time!
Terribly sorry to trouble you, sir, especially at this hour. It seems a neighbor reported a shriek coming from this home.
We have been dispatched to search the premises. May we enter?
Why, of course, gentlemen. Do come in. I will turn up the lamp. Unfortunately, I am afflicted with horrible nightmares. Just this night, an especially gruesome vision paid me a visit. The shriek was my own in a dream. My deepest apology. Please do search the house as you see fit.
As I recall, you are familiar with this neighborhood.
Yes, I am familiar with this very house and its owner.
And is this the kitchen in here?
Yes, through that door there.
I was fortunate to spend my boyhood years nearby. Is the old man about?
Why, no. In fact, he is currently traveling abroad. I lease a room from the old man, sequestered in the rear of the house.
Ah, yes, I have heard tale of you. A writer, are you?
Yes, I...
Everything seems in order in the kitchen and here in the parlor. No sign of any disturbance anywhere, actually.
Only one room remains. The old man's chamber? Would you care to search there?
Yes,
up these stairs here?
Watch your step there.
Dark, isn't it?
Yes.
I showed them his treasures, secure, undisturbed. In the enthusiasm of my confidence, I brought chairs into the room and desired them here to rest from their fatigues, while I myself, in the wild audacity of my perfect triumph, placed my own seat upon the very spot beneath which reposed the corpse of the victim.
Quite a pleasant room, is it not?
Oh, yes. The old man clearly enjoys his comfort.
Well, no suspicion of foul play here.
I believe you are correct, thankfully. Although I am sorry not to have found the old man at home. It would have pleased me to share in his company and recount the old days of my youth.
You say you spent some years in this area as a boy. You must have... Pardon me, gentlemen. Do you detect a faint noise, a sort of low thudding sound?
No. No, I hear nothing but the dead of night.
Ah, must be the lingering effects of my ghoulish dream. No matter.
As I was saying, in the days of my youth...
Do you hear it?
Oh, these old houses tend to make the strangest sounds.
No, I am quite sure it is not the house. The sound is familiar. I know that sound. As you were saying, in the days of your youth.
Oh, yes. When I was a boy, the old man took great delight in holding lavish parties for the entire neighborhood.
Did he now? The entire neighborhood?
Yes, indeed. The whole lot of us.
Say, what is that? Oh, a nail caught on my shoe.
Where?
There, near my foot. In fact, this whole plague is use.
Ah, yes, so it is.
A simple hammer would
Curious.
Fix that. You would not want to hurt anyone.
Surely, gentlemen, you must be weary from this visit at such an ungodly hour. I do not wish to delay you further.
Oh, quite the contrary. I find I am feeling quite refreshed.
As am I.
Yes, refreshed, renewed, invigorated. I am inspired to share my latest poem. Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered weak and bells, the bells, 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 what a tale their terror tells of despair, how they cling and clash and roar, keeping time.
Are you all right, son?
And his eyes have all the seeming of a demon's that is dreaming in a kingdom by the sea.
What is this senseless babble?
For the moon never beams without bringing me dreams of the in the silence of the night. How we shiver with the fright.
Sir, if you do not calm down this instant, I may have...
Now, look here, young man.
Is it possible you do not hear? You know, you are making a mockery of my horror.
What has gotten into you?
Villains! Dissemble no more. I admit the deed. Tear up the planks. Here! Here!
Poor old man! Oh, he must have suffered.
beating of his hideous heart. Nervous, very, very dreadfully nervous I had been, and am. But why will you say that I'm mad? The disease had sharpened my senses, not dulled them. Above all was the sense of hearing acute. I heard all things in heaven and in the earth. I heard many things in hell. How then am I mad? Hearken and observe how healthily, how calmly I can tell you the whole story.
Edgar Allan Poe's The Telltale Heart, adapted for radio by the folks at KUER's Radio West and Salt Lake City's Plan B Theater Company. Presented for you today on today's WHFR Journal. Wrapping things up, we hope that was most certainly a treat rather than a trick as we head into this Halloween weekend. More spooky sounds on the way this evening from 6 to 8 p.m. We do hope you'll join us not only for Highway 61 and the Go With The Flow Mike Holloway Show, but stay tuned through this evening here on WHFR. And then, of course, we will have Halloween grab bag giveaways going on all weekend here at WHFR, making waves. This is WHFR Dearborn, 89.3 FM, WHFR.FM, making waves. Have a spooky and wonderful weekend. We'll see you next week on the WHFR Journal.
Stay.